Welcome to Mysteries to Die For and this toe tag. I am T.G. Wolf, and I'm here with Jack, my piano player and producer. This is normally a podcast where we combine storytelling with original music to put you at the heart of a mystery. Today is a bonus episode that we call a toe tag. It's the first chapter from a fresh release in the mystery, crime, and thriller genre. Today's featured release is Wet, Warm, and Noisy by David A. Wilson. All right, so even though I said that this is the first chapter from a fresh release, we are going to do the second chapter from a fresh release. So let's jump into chapter 2, From Wet, Warm, and Noisy. Palmer, Alaska, today. Cool springtime winds kicked up across the shooting range outside the Palmer city limits. Behind the long mound of dirty ice and gravel that served as a backstop, the majestic Chagach Mountains, half covered in snow, stood proudly in the distance as two men faced a target stand. The target was cardboard, the outline of a human torso stapled to two upright posts. The men were real, however. One was an Alaska State Trooper firearms instructor serving as range master. The other was Trooper Investigator Jacob Ward. The shot timer sounded, and Ward's right hand went to his hip. In one fluid motion, his thumb defeated the retention mechanism, and his fingers clasped the hand grip to free the .40 caliber Glock pistol from his belt, pointing it toward the target. Grip, clear, rock and lock. Almost a second had already passed when his left hand moved from its place on his solar plex to the pistol, completing the grip on the gun, the smack step. He pushed it forward to the target, closing one eye as he focused on the front sight, the look step. He imagined his index finger pulling the slack off the trigger as he prepared to deliver two shots, center mass, but he couldn't be sure because he couldn't feel it, not even a bit. Pop, pop, two shots. One had gone early and hit wide of the target because his presentation was terrible. It had been too long since he'd been to the range and the results showed. Then, of course, there was the other issue. He aimed the gun higher, focusing on the head of the paper target. Focus. His finger started to pull back when the shot timer beeped again. Pop. Too late. Overtime, the rangemaster said, as if Jake didn't know. It was his third penalty in as many rounds. First shot went off early, which wouldn't be a problem if he had a better presentation, but it's wide and slow. Yeah, Jake said. Fingers still numb? Nah, Ward lied, and then turned back and forth doing his safety scans before inserting a full magazine and replacing the pistol in the holster. Frustrated and nervous, he needlessly adjusted his hearing protection. A breeze swept across the range, startling him and bringing a chill to his shaved head. He should have worn something warmer than his state trooper ball cap. But the blue BDU and cap were as close to a uniform as he could get until he got approval for full duty. He wanted to feel like a real trooper again, in a bad way. Are you pushing this too soon? The captain is happy to keep you on light duty. If I don't get out here and just do it, Ward said, I'll never qualify, neuropathy or not. True, but with three overtimes already, I'm not sure you'll make any progress with the qual course today. The burly rangemaster stepped closer, a concerned look on his face. Ward had rarely seen the man show any feeling. He was usually all business. Everyone knows you shoot well, but you've had a rough go lately. You'll get there, but not all at once. Let's ditch the course and do some slow presentations. Dry practice, maybe. Fundamentals. But Ward didn't move. Instead, squaring up to the targets. It wasn't just the neuropathy and numb fingers. He had weak toes and shaky hands, and shaky confidence, but he wouldn't get his mojo back by sitting at a desk. Suit yourself, the rangemaster said, then huffed and stepped back. He paused and then raised his voice back to range levels. Again, fail to stop drill at 7 yards, 5 seconds from the holster. Ward focused, his eyes drilling a hole in the target where he wanted the shots to hit. Shooter ready. The timer sounded. The drive to work along the Glen Highway was uneventful, other than a speeder that insisted on doing 85, tailgating everyone who dared occupy their lane. If he'd been driving his assigned vehicle, Ward would have activated his emergency lights and pulled the punk over for a friendly conversation. But light duty status means no trooper rig unless you have special permission, not even an unmarked one, and no gun, at least until he could qualify. The occasional wind gust caused Ward's blue Chevy pickup to sway within the lanes, distracting him from the sound of the political commentary streaming through the truck's speaker. The talk show radio host paused for a news report announcing a shooting at a gas station in Anchorage last night, municipal budget cuts, and something about a missing college kid. There would always be crime, and therefore plenty of job security. The traffic got thicker as Ward traveled through Eagle River, Anchorage's closest suburb, then even worse as he exited off the highway onto Muldoon Road. Muldoon became Tudor Road, and he turned into the Alaska Bureau of Investigation parking lot. He parked the truck and came through the side entrance, stopping at the break room to see if the coffee was rolling yet, hoping that a fellow caffeine addict had beaten him to work today. The empty coffee pot announced no such luck. A few minutes later, he welcomed a steady stream of black goodness into the pot and was on his way down the hall to the office. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation's Technical Crimes Unit was a modest space in a boring rectangular building in East Anchorage. What happened within those walls, though, was anything but boring. One sergeant, two civilian techs, and three investigators were involved in some of the biggest criminal investigations in Alaska. Even when they didn't have primary case responsibility, they provided critical support to other officers. It was the variety that had attracted Ward to this kind of work. Sure, he had a talent for technology, which helped him get the job, but that wasn't why he was here. What attracted him was that no 2 days were ever the same. He could write a search warrant for a child exploitation case in the morning, and then do a forensic computer exam for a homicide case before lunch. He might kick a door on a building search, only to be called away to sit shotgun in a helicopter, acting as a spotter for a search and rescue. The variety of work duties of an Alaska State Trooper investigator was unparalleled, unless you were on light duty. Ward! It was Sergeant Balak down the hall, shouting from his office. Ward got to his feet, snagging his notebook and a pen on the way out of his cubicle. That shout always came with some other duty as assigned, or so the trooper saying goes. As always, the sergeant's office smelled old, musty maybe. He didn't know if it was Balak's bad cologne or his shampoo, but then his sense of smell kind of sucked. Chemotherapy will do that to you. The sergeant turned to face Ward as he entered, grabbing a few papers off his desk as he did so. The man had quite a glorious head of hair, and it probably took some fancy conditioners to keep its form, adding a good 3 inches to his already impressive height. "What you got for me, boss?" "Have a seat," Balak said. He was impeccably dressed as always, with a sharp red tie and blue tailor suit. "How you feeling?" "I'm fine." "Ward, you're not fine. Cut the crap. Nobody who's battling pancreatic cancer is fine. Serious. How are you?" "Surgery went well enough," Ward said. "Chemo is over and my oncologist thinks I've got a shot. Neuropathy is getting better every day. I'm ready for full duty, sir." "My wife has a friend who works at a cancer clinic. She said you're not out of the woods till you hit 5 years. Is that right?" "Heck, Ward loved to make it 5 years. A few months ago, he thought he was toast." "With pancreatic cancer," he said, "it comes back fast or it doesn't come back at all. If I make it 2 years, I'm probably okay." He didn't tell him about the other problems, though. Digestive issues causing low energy, numb fingers and toes, memory lapses, concentration, yada, yada. You can't kill cancer cells without killing a lot of other stuff, apparently. "Don't rush it, okay?" Balak put down the papers. "I can keep you busy on light duty for a long time." "What do you have there, Sarge?" polygraph, he said. You game? Absolutely. What's the case? Palmer Patrol picked up some crazy chick on the grave shift. A person in crisis. She tried to break into a warehouse a couple of nights ago. Then she babbled about being kidnapped, something about a kid, all kinds of nutty stuff. Balak rolled his eyes. I'm thinking poly her, see if she's cracked. If her claims are legit, we'll follow up. What do you think? Ward said, I've been looking for some actual police work to do. He reached for the paper. Find out about the kidnapping, Balak said. If it happened at all, if you can get an admission on why she was trying to get into the warehouse, that's the real target. We rarely run polygraphs on victims, Ward pointed out. She's full of crap, Alex said. She's a doper who tried to rob a building, and we want to know why. Polly is a pretext for interrogation. Well, that's fine, Ward said. I haven't run a poly in months, and I'm going blind on all those public information requests you keep handing me. It'll give me something real to do. Ward moved to leave. Ward, he turned. Take it easy, son. It's a polygraph, boss. Ward furrowed his brow. I'll survive. Sergeant Vance told me about the range. Crap. Don't push it, Ward. I'm not talking about the polygraph or the range. Just in general, Balak said. Bodies take time to heal, and you've been through hell. He had no idea. Got it, boss. I mean it, Balak said. We'll wait for you to be strong. Ward bit his lip, trying to hold back, but the pity was too much for his pride. I got it, okay? Got it. You care. Everyone cares. Don't rush it. Loud and clear. I'm good. Then he walked out of the room. All right, so that was chapter 2. But I think we're going to go ahead into chapter 3, because, okay, now you've got a taste of who Ward is and what his sitch is. But let's get a peek into his case. So chapter 3. The basement offices under the Boney Courthouse in downtown Anchorage were cavernous, cold, and empty. What had served for years as the main court for the 3rd Judicial District of Alaska had been usurped by the newer, taller Nesbitt Courthouse next door. Nesbitt had modern, spacious rooms for judges and improved security infrastructure for prisoners. Boney was now relegated to handling overflow, minor district court cases, and otherwise being reminiscent of a ghost town. Ward preferred this location for prisoner exams because of its proximity to the holding cells and quiet atmosphere. Setting up the instrument in an empty office took a few minutes. He set the polygraph chair nearby and then arranged the movement sensors on the floor, seat, and armrests. He pulled 2 bottles of water from his kit and placed them on the small desk. A quick diagnostic showed the sensors were working, and he sat on the steel folding chair in front of the laptop screen. He pulled out the case file, which was just a bunch of papers printed from the records management system. Glancing at the document, he skipped unnecessary details until he found Trooper Dixon's draft narrative report. Dixon was the case officer and the first to respond to the burglary where she was arrested. Upon arrival, I exited my patrol car and walked along the east side of the warehouse. It was dark, and my headlights didn't completely illuminate the scene, so I deployed my flashlight. Ward reflected on his time in patrol. One never knew what was coming. The adrenaline, the excitement, the danger. It could go from boring to life-threatening in an instant. You had to always be ready. He missed it, and he didn't. The report continued. I observed a female subject, ultimately identified as Belle Anderson, attempting to force the warehouse man door open with a crowbar. I scaled the perimeter chain link fence and approached Anderson with my duty pistol in the guard position, calling out, "Troopers, put your hands in the air." She didn't respond, trying to force the door open with a crowbar, half-heartedly scratching more than actually forcing it with the tool. She wore a thin shirt, stocking cap, sweats, and tennis shoes. I called a second time, but she didn't react. That's odd, Ward thought. Mental health issues, drugs, or a medical emergency? According to the rest of the report, Dixon approached Anderson and took the crowbar from her without incident. A few minutes later, she was cuffed in the back of a patrol car. Medics cleared her shortly thereafter, and Dixon placed her in a holding cell at the Palmer Trooper Post. Ultimately, he did a formal interview, and she identified herself as Belle Anderson. She made a statement about being kidnapped and held hostage, but he provided few details on that part. Fortunately, it happened in the interview room at Palmer Post 2 days ago, so there would be a video he could review. The report cut off at that point, unfinished. Dixon may have dismissed Anderson's testimony as crazy talk. Dopers love to flip the script and play their crimes as if somehow they are the actual victims. Kidnapping victims don't grab crowbars and scratch weakly on warehouse doors in the middle of the night, so Ward couldn't blame him one bit. The woman needed mental health treatment, not a polygraph. Less than 10 minutes later, a clean-cut, uniformed court services officer escorted a short, thin female prisoner into the room. The officer's name tag read P. Jenkins. Ward didn't recognize him, but the star on his left sleeve showed he had at least 5 years of seniority, and he felt bad that he hadn't met the man before. The work these officers did to keep the courts moving smoothly and the prisoners safely transported often went underappreciated. "Thank you, Jenkins," Ward said, standing. "No problem, sir." He moved to leave. "Wait," Ward said. "Cuffs off." Jenkins frowned. "Off? You're waiting for her, right? You'll be outside?" "Yes," he said. "Searched her?" "Yes, of course." "I trust you. I can't conduct an exam on a restrained examinee." Jenkins shrugged and pulled out the handcuff key, removed the cuffs in a well-practiced move, and then tucked them into the pocket in his vest. Dressed like a typical prisoner, she wore baggy yellow garb that was too big for her frame. Her medium brown-length hair was shoulder-length, and her face was pale. She might have been pretty if she hadn't seemed so sick. Her arms were clean of track marks, although she could have been a pill popper. She looked past Ward, her eyes vacant. Sarge's comments about a crazy chick babbling nonsense were how one would describe a very different person from the broken human who stood before him now, quiet as a mouse. "Belle Anderson, right?" Ward asked. She didn't respond. "Let's get started," he said, nodding at Jenkins, who promptly left the room. Ward pulled up a second steel folding chair for Anderson to sit on, but he had to nudge her shoulder for her to catch the hint. When he was ready to take charts, she moved to the larger, scarier chair with all the sensors. Until then, they would talk. Polygraph exams weren't only about charts. First, he needed to lay the ground rules, and with her altered state, he might cancel this whole exam real quick-like. "Belle?" he said. No response. "Belle, I'm Investigator Ward. Do you know why you're here?" She blinked twice and then glanced around as if noticing the room for the first time. Her gaze returned to him. "Hello, Mr. Ward." "Wow," he thought, "this keeps getting weirder." "I'm here because you think I'm lying," she said. "Not true. I have no opinion at this point." He cleared his throat. At least she was engaging, but he hoped that her attention wouldn't lapse while they were taking a chart. "Once we've concluded the examination, I'll score the data and form an opinion. Until then, I will treat your statement as truthful." She relaxed in the chair, putting her palms down on her thighs. Color had returned to her face, chasing the pallid look away. "Fair enough," she said, with a small shrug. Ward took a moment. Silence often extracted information from an examinee as they rushed to fill the gap. Didn't work with everyone, but he liked to see what people might offer, what they might leak. "He's a nibbler," she said. "This is making him kind of nervous, or maybe I do." "Really?" Ward raised an eyebrow. Was she talking about Jenkins? "That's what my gran used to call me when I bit my fingernails," she said. "When I was nervous, I'd nibble, and sometimes I make my finger bleed. He's gonna get there." Ward looked at her nails, not manicured, but they weren't nibbled either. "Oh, I got over it," she said, smiling. She had a pleasant smile, a and straight teeth. "So," he said, clearing his throat, "let's get started. Since you're in custody, the first thing is the Miranda warning." Ward pulled a piece of paper from his file folder, pre-printed with the warning, and several boxes for her to initial. "This is a standard procedure for in-custody cases," he said. "Okay," she said. "You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law." She nodded. "You have the right to have an attorney present before and during questioning if you wish." She nodded again. "If you cannot afford to hire an attorney, one can be appointed to represent you free of charge." She nodded again. "You can choose at any time not to exercise these rights, not to answer any questions, or make any statements. Do you understand these rights that I have read to you?" "Yes," she said. "And having these rights in mind," he continued, "do you agree to answer my questions right now?" "Sure," she said. "Go ahead." He pushed the paper over and dropped a pen on top. She paused, staring at the page, but her eyes weren't moving as they should have been. "Miss Anderson?" he prompted. No response. "Belle." She shook her head, returned her gaze to the paper, grabbed the pen, initialed the boxes, and signed the bottom. "Okay, tell me, Miss Anderson, why do you think you're here?" "I got caught breaking into a building," she said. "Probably said crazy stuff, and you're here to check that out." Ward looked through the stack of papers, finding Dixon's supplement on her statement. "Yes," he said. "In the interview with Trooper Dixon, you mentioned being taken against your will. Kidnapped." She frowned. "Yeah, never mind about that." Her finger scratched something on the desk. "I wasn't in a good place." "When someone says kidnapped," Ward said, "we take that seriously. Were you kidnapped, or did you make that up?" "I made it up," she said. "Why?" he asked. "I don't know," she said. "What were you on?" he asked. "On?" she raised an eyebrow. "Belle, it was cold, and you weren't wearing a coat in the middle of the night. Some folks might think drugs." "Oh, of course," she said. "I'm sorry, no." "No what?" Ward asked. "No drugs," she said. Doubtful, he thought, but interesting. "I'll cut right to the chase. Why were you trying to get into that warehouse?" Ward softened the accusation, of course, according to his interview training. "Get into" didn't imply a criminal intent like the word burglary did. "I didn't mean to," she said. "Can we leave it at that?" She could stop any time, and Ward didn't want to push it. "Of course." He cleared his throat yet again. "The first thing I'd like to do is get acquainted with you, with the process. Tell me, what do you know about polygraph exams?" Her eyes focused on Ward's computer and then followed the pneumotubes, the electrodermal activity sensors, and fixed on the cardio cuff. "Not much, I guess." Her head turned toward the poly chair itself. Large, black, and quite imposing, it caught attention for its high back and long padded armrests. Not your typical piece of furniture. She looked back at Ward. "I thought I'd see a machine with little squiggly ink lines." "That's old school," he said, and patted the top of his laptop computer screen. "All computerized now." "Well, I guess I don't know anything," she said. "If I lie, does it have a big flashing red light or something?" "Not exactly," he said. "It's like this. Polygraph doesn't detect lies. It's really a threat detector. And when you tell a lie, your body reacts the same as when it's facing a threat." "Oh, okay," she said. "Telling the truth," he went on, "is natural for human beings. Easy. It flows for us. But when we lie, we have to be creative, invent information, and worry about punishment. That triggers our sympathetic nervous system, increasing our heart rate and blood flow, sweat response, that sort of thing." "Flight or flight?" she asked. He nodded. "Yes, exactly. Or sometimes freeze. We often stop moving out of fear." "I've done that," she said. "We all have. I could explain more, but it's easier to show you. Care for a demonstration?" "Sure." She sat up in her chair and leaned forward, clearly engaging. "Tell me your full name," Ward said. she cocked an eyebrow. Belle Elaine Anderson. Thank you, Ward said. Now I'm going to ask you the same question, but this time I want you to lie. He paused. Tell me your full name. Her brows furrowed and she shifted in her chair. Dana Marie. Her fingers scratched the desk as she looked down. Johansson. See how long that took? Ward asked. She smiled. Yeah. During that moment, when you were searching for names, your brain operated at a higher level than earlier. Your blood pressure rose, your sweating increased, you moved about in your chair, and you even scratched your fingers on the desk. The stress that simple question induced in you was measurable just by looking at you. I didn't even need an instrument. Now imagine how a sensitive instrument could see those changes. That's how a polygraph works. Wow, this should be interesting, she said. She adjusted herself in the chair. If you want to grab a drink of water, he said, now would be a good time. No response. Okay, then. He paused. Would you mind if I spoke with the officer outside? Be my guest, she said. Not like I have a choice. She did have a choice, actually. She could end this interview and examination anytime she wanted. Maintaining her cooperation was a big part of his training. The best techniques were old-fashioned respect and courtesy, however. Most criminals moved in circles where they received little kindness and often had self-esteem issues, and a gentle word went a long way. As one of his academy instructors once said, if you take someone's freedom away, at least let them keep their dignity. A few steps later, Ward was in the hallway, leaving the door cracked open. Tell me, he said softly so Anderson couldn't hear. Any problem with transport? Any issues? No, sir. She's been fine. Jenkins nibbled on a fingernail. Anderson had that right. He was a nibbler. She wasn't zoning out. She focused on others. I take that back, Jenkins said. She froze when I asked her to get out of the van. Acted like she didn't hear me, but it lasted quite a while. Might be a hearing issue, but I saw nothing on her medical sheet. Her medical sheet? Ward asked. Oh, yeah, Jenkins said. I asked about those to make sure they don't need any medications or anything. These all-day trips can be bad if they miss their meds. I had a guy go into a seizure once because he missed his meds. Ah, Ward said. Makes sense. Thanks, Jenkins. No problem, Jenkins said. Best of luck in there. Ward said, yeah, I'm going to need it. All right, so that was chapter 2 and 3 of Wet, Warm, and Noisy by David A. Wilson. To find out why I didn't read chapter 1, well, you're going to have to read chapter 1. So let's go into my review. So Wet, Warm, and Noisy is a psychological thriller. Alaska State Trooper Jake Ward is stuck on light duty, as you just heard, and a polygraph assignment is a welcome break from the monotony. A woman was arrested breaking into a warehouse. Her defense? She was kidnapped. Ward's job is to determine if she is a suspect or a victim. As he is realizing something's out of the ordinary, she is broken out of jail. Now a court services officer is fighting for his life, the woman is on the run with the shooter, and there's no way in hell Ward is staying out of this case. Bottom line, Wet, Warm, and Noisy is for you if you like psychological thrillers with a side of medical sci-fi. I don't know why that sentence gave me so much trouble. And I don't know why I keep wanting to say nosy instead of noisy. So yes, Wet, Warm, and Noisy is for you if you like psychological thrillers with a side of medical sci-fi. All right, so what are the strengths of this story? The premise of the story is simple and really intriguing. There was something wrong with Belle Anderson. You all just heard that. Any drugs would have been out of her system by the time the polygraph went. So what was the explanation for the way she would freeze up? She was alternately oblivious and then hyperly aware. A mix of curiosity and duty drive Ward to investigate Anderson, leading him into a world of a study on the brain and human consciousness. This is a psychological thriller, but if it were a mystery, it would be a what is going on type. So instead of a whodunit, it's a what's going on. Wilson does an excellent job of grabbing the reader by their curiosity and then never letting go. So Jake Ward, our hero, is a very likable character. He's a thinking man, not an action hero. He survived surgery and treatments for pancreatic cancer, and he's determined to get the rest of his life back. Ward is a normal guy, and sometimes making decisions that puts his back in a corner. He drives the story, continually pushing on who Belle Anderson is and what her circumstances are. If Ward would have backed off, the story would have ended. So his actions challenge the bad guys, who I'm going to call Bee Gees, challenge the Bee Gees world, forcing them to react, and then Ward to overcome whatever the next obstacle is. Belle Anderson is not a stereotypical character. She's the narrator for a few chapters, giving us a peek into the Bee Gees world that Ward doesn't have. She'll really challenge readers to decide if she's a criminal or a victim. Belle went into the Bee Gees world willingly, but unlike Ward, she's not able to drive her own narrative and thus becomes a victim. I cheered for Belle, but other readers could easily go the other way, and just recognizing it means that Wilson did a really excellent job crafting her. The Alaskan setting is richly described, showing the challenges of protecting the peace in such a large territory. The supporting characters were well developed and acted true to their nature. I especially like that the other Alaska State Troopers acted as a professional and supportive organization, meaning I really like that there was not that trope of the a-hole boss that the hero was constantly battling. So where did the story fall short? There isn't a lot to pick on this one. The logic, when I examined it from the back and forward, as you all know I like to do, it's a pretty straight line and there were no breaks. You know, that's not always the case with thrillers as they seek to surprise the reader with a twist. Ward put in the time and the sweat equity to unearth the clues, using the technology and other resources available to the troopers. The story largely avoided the use of coincidences. There was one single scene where I didn't follow how the bad guys got to a certain place. It could have been convenient for the story or me just missing a key detail. Wilson's pacing is deliberate, allowing the story to unfold. There were times when I wanted it to move faster, but that was primarily driven by my curiosity, just wanting to know what the heck was going on. There were a few elements where I thought the editing could have been a little bit stronger. Sometimes there was just a little bit too much repetition of he said type stuff. But all in all, I thought it was a really strongly written story. The medical elements of the story, that's beyond my expertise to comment on. From a civilian standpoint, the scenes were well told, enabling me to understand and picture what was going on without having either an MD or a PhD. Days after I finished Wet, Warm, and Noisy, I found myself thinking about the sci-fi premise and Ward's actions. This only happens when a story really catches me and my own wet, warm, and noisy brain wants to know more. So that's my review. I very much like this one. I said it definitely grabbed my curiosity and I wanted to know what was happening. So Wet, Warm, and Noisy was released in March of 2024 and is promoted by Partners in Crime Tours. It is available on Amazon and other book retailers, and the link for that is in the show notes. So let's learn a little about our author, David A. Wilson. He is a retired Alaska State Trooper with more than two decades of service, and he brings unmatched authenticity to his crime fiction. I have to agree with that. I really enjoyed the way he wrote it. Really did feel like, you know, we were in the moment. I think I'll choose that word. During his career, he served as a certified police instructor, polygraph program coordinator, court-certified computer forensic expert, and supervisor of both major crimes and technical crimes units. With over a decade in an investigative capacity, he supervised thousands of felony cases, chasing Alaska's most dangerous criminals. So let me tell you a little bit about Partners in Crime Tours. They represent a network of 300 plus bloggers offering tailor-made virtual book tours and marketing options for crime, mystery, and thriller writers from around the world. Founded in 2011, PICT offers virtual book tour services for the well-established and best-selling authors, as well as those just getting started in their careers. PICT prides itself on tailored packages for authors with a personal touch from tour coordinators. For more information, check out their website, partnersincrimetours.com. Link is in the show notes. All right, that brings us to the end. So join us next week for episode 9 in season 7, Games People Play. Our story is A Head for Murder by Rick Olerman, where Headbands is the featured game. And with that, I turn to Jack. Take us out.